Hello, and welcome to Inspect Tech, the evident, non-destructive testing podcast. My name is Émilie Pédoquin, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Today, our podcast will have a different flavor. We often focus on the well-known NDT techniques like ultrasound and eddy current, but today, you'll have a different host than myself to interview a different sector, the mining industry. Your host for today will be Michelle Wright. Michelle has over 9 years of experience in marketing communication for the analytical instruments business at Eviden to promote X-ray fluorescent, also known as XRF, analyzers. She works closely with product engineering and application groups to assist with launching new products, creating webinars, and writing application notes. Today, she's interviewing Todd Houlihan. Todd graduated from the University of Newcastle, Australia in 1993 with a degree in soils and hydrology. For the past 18 years, Todd has been a leader in the portable XRF revolution in the mineral exploration and mining industries, publishing numerous papers on the subject and presenting at international conferences. And for the past 10 years, Todd has led Eviden's International Mining Group, helping explorers, miners, and their shareholders achieving cost efficiencies by using the best portable XRF and XRD technology solutions. I hope you'll enjoy their conversation.
All right. Hi, my name is Michelle Wright. I'm here today with Todd Houlihan. Todd, thanks for being on the show.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
So, Todd, one thing we ask all of our podcast guests is, how did you stumble across non-destructive testing?
Well, I was I was working as an environmental consultant. I studied environmental science in Australia, and it was in Sydney in the year 2000 of the Sydney Olympics. And I was cleaning up a lead-contaminated site, and we were excavating soil that had lead concentrations above 300 parts per million, and you have to prove that the soil you're leaving in situ is below 300 parts per million. So I've got all these trucks and excavators hanging around waiting while I take soil samples and send them to the laboratory for 24-hour turnaround, and then I'd get the samples back from the lab while there's no work going on site, and they were above 300 parts per million, so we'd have to continue excavating. So the costs were overrunning on this particular project, and the site auditor recommended that I get someone in with a field portable XRF to guide the excavation so that we could be confident when we were excavating the material and leaving material in situ that the soil would be below 300 ppm. So at the end of the day, we saved the client, the property owner, a load of time and money. And that was my first introduction to field portable XRF. And then I went to work for that guy who happened to be the distributor of portable XRF in Australia at the time. And he had an environmental consulting company. So we were using the instruments as part of the environmental consulting work and also selling instruments. I was doing a bit of 50-50. And that was my introduction into the world of portable XRF.
Interesting. For anyone that's not familiar with portable XRF, what does XRF stand for?
XRF is X-ray fluorescence. It's an analytical technique that's been around for, I think, since around the 30s or 40s, if I might stand corrected from XRF gurus on that. But it's been around. It's a very well-known analytical technique and was sort of miniaturized towards maybe the 80s and the 90s with isotopes as the excitation source. But then in around 2000, miniaturized X-ray tubes started to be used, and that's really when the technology started to take off in all sorts of markets.
Yeah, it's really interesting. One thing for anyone that's never seen an XRF analyzer, the ones that we're talking about today, comes in different form factors, but there's a handheld device. It looks, people sometimes refer to it as a gun, that you would pick up, place onto a sample, like you're shooting the sample, you pull a trigger, and on the back of the instrument, the instruments that we have here, have a like a cell phone type readout that will tell you the elemental composition or parts per million of whatever you're testing, whether it's soil, rocks, toys, really any type of metal or alloy, anything that you could possibly test. And that's non-destructive, so it's not harming the sample. I guess from there, how did you end up in your journey to join Evident?
I was working for a competitor for a total of about 8 years. And there was a lot of guys within that organization who specialized in the mining business and really enjoyed working in the mining industry. And a lot of us came over to a company that was called Innovex at the time, which got acquired by Olympus. We all came over together in about 2008, and we were acquired by Olympus in 2010. So, yeah, I'm coming up to nearly 15 years with this company. It's been great.
Congratulations.
Yeah, no, it's been great.
So want to tell me a little bit about the types of customers you visit today and go on site all over the world to help them address their issues for where they need non-destructive testing?
Sure. So the largest proportion of our customer base that I work with is mineral exploration companies. So mineral exploration companies could be private, they could be public, meaning they're listed on a stock exchange. And you know, mostly they don't generate any revenue. They just spend money trying to find deposits, economic deposits of commodities or metals that may one day become a mine, become mineable, so that we can extract the metals that we need for our everyday life. So exploration is one of the largest. Gold exploration, nickel exploration, copper exploration, lead, zinc, you name it, phosphate, uranium, iron ore. But also a large proportion of our customer base are the mines themselves. So exploration might take 10 years. An exploration company might generate some revenue by perhaps finding something that looks promising and then selling that on to another company and then going and looking elsewhere. So when I say they don't generate revenue, they don't in the traditional sense, but they might buy and sell properties to generate some revenue. And then once they find something economic and that goes through a feasibility phase, then they'll start the mine, build the mine, start the mine, and start extracting the material and processing the material. So as part of the mining process, there's portable XRF applications as part of the processing. Metallurgy, mineral processing, there's portable XRF applications in the lab for environmental applications. There's also a really strong connection with academia. So we work a lot with university geological departments, government research institutes, geological consultants, environmental consultants, also archaeology. We do a fair bit of work in archaeology. Anything geochemistry is what we work with. People who need to test rocks, soils, maybe ceramics, bone, you know, we get all sorts of weird and wacky applications. But it's mostly, yeah, a large proportion of what I do day to day would be with mining and exploration companies.
So that must have you go to really interesting places all over the world.
It does. Yeah, it does. And with some of the questions that I was reading, I was going to be asked today, one of the notes I made was that the international travel is probably the best part of my job, but also the worst part of my job. You might be coming up to this question later, but yeah, it's fantastic. It's wonderful being able to experience so many different countries and cultures and people. But you know, that takes you away from home. And when you've got three sons and a loving wife at home, that's the challenge, you know, trying to find that balance. But I love my job. It's great.
I have three boys as well, so definitely understand that. So speaking about that and the travel, I guess, do you want to go back a little bit to your specialties and expertise, and how, I guess, and how it relates to how you got here today?
Yeah, sure. I think I'm one of the lucky ones, really, because I've been able to focus on one product, essentially, a portable XRF, into one market, you know, the geochemistry market. So that's really allowed me to really dial in to the needs of the industry and understand a bit of everything. I mean, day to day, I have sort of three key job functions. One is in sales. You know, I have direct contact with customers. I support our distributors and our sales channels in their dialogue with customers and in training them and their customers. But the second job function I have is marketing. I do a lot of application notes, web info, blogs, webinars, training, short courses, and I attend a lot of conferences and exhibitions. And then the other sort of key function really is a business development function, looking for what the next market's going to be, what's the hot metal around the corner, who's going to be our next sort of partner to perhaps develop something new with, and also looking after our, you know, strategically important customers. I'd say my biggest strength is sort of in coordinating projects that involve a lot of different people across different time zones with different skill sets across different genders and cultures. I mean, the mining business is very international. So I routinely might be working with a company that's based, say, in Vancouver, whose principal geologist might be based in Norway, but their exploration project might be in Peru. So yeah, and that's actually a real example. The guy will know who I'm talking about when he mentions that. But that's really not uncommon. And so I think my skill set's being able to coordinate the support for that project and that customer by kind of getting all the relevant parties on the same page to find a solution. I think I'm a good coordinator, sort of facilitator in that sense.
Absolutely. I mean, Todd and I have been working together for almost 10 years now. So it is definitely one of your strengths. And it's really just so interesting, all the different aspects of the mining industry. What would you say are some of the challenges? I bet spanning all those time zones, you probably never get to sleep.
Yeah. I mean, I live in the UK, so normally it's you wake up to what's come in from Asia overnight. You do Europe, Middle East, Africa during the day, and then in the evenings, the Americas. I think I haven't had huge amount of difficulties or challenges, if I'm honest. I've been really lucky with the managers that I've had over the years. I mentioned the main one I thought was just finding the balance between work and family, and I think I've managed to do that. So, you know, one of the challenges, I suppose, is change. Like with the technology that we manufacture and sell generally necessitate some changes within an organization at the customer site. So that's sometimes quite challenging to when I know deep down that implementation of our technology is going to be of benefit. You know, it's hard to convince someone to go with that. So we've done a lot of case studies over the years to try and make sure we can back up what we say with evidence. So the change, implementing change in a mining environment is challenging. But on the same side of the fence, it's been the most rewarding aspect of my career so far because, you know, when 22 years ago, we were selling tens of instruments per year globally for mining and exploration applications. And now, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of instruments being sold per year. And the technology is kind of ubiquitous. Everyone's got a portable XRF if they're, you know, in exploration and mining, whether it's ours or someone else's. So that's been hugely satisfying to see this change occur during my watch of being a custodian of this technology in the mining industry. So that's been cool.
Do you think that so our instrument gives some test results and data? Are you working with customers in a consultative role about how to then implement the data into their systems and how really to put that to work?
Not so much. That I wouldn't say that's my area of expertise. My area of expertise is to try and help them get good data. There's probably other people within our organization and within our industry who will then help get the data into the software or the decision-making tools that they use. I'm more front-end, helping them develop a method, a workflow, you know, whether that's through sample prep, whether it's through test times, selecting the right containers to use. I'm more front-end. My expertise is workflow, front-end, make sure the instrument is going to generate really good data so that they can use in the way that they want to use it best.
What do you think are some of the things you've enjoyed most about your career to date? You mentioned travel and traveling all over the world to help customers across many different cultures and countries. Any notable stories or experiences about that?
Oh, wow. I tell you, one thing that I've loved a huge amount is working in the mining industry. You know, the people are so genuine. The technology is so awesome. They know how to have fun, but also work really hard. And, you know, a lot of my close friends now I've met through working in this industry and are customers, and that's been really rewarding. You know, just in being embedded in an industry that is so impressive, has, you know, such cool technology, is responsible despite, you know, what their bad reputation might suggest in some quarters. That's been really rewarding. Being involved in the mining industry is hugely satisfying.
Has there been anything in the XRF space that's really been a game changer, either new technology or like what's something notable?
Oh, there's loads of notable. Loads of notable things, I suppose. I think when we started generating a lot of case studies to show, in the mid 2000s and late 2008 to 2010, where we started generating a lot of data compared with the lab, started doing some return on investment calculations, and then customers started to do that themselves and you know, really well-known geochemists and geological surveys and academics. That was probably about 12 years ago. It started to get really exciting because, you know, what we'd been saying was starting to be perpetuated within the industry itself, and that's when things really started to take off, I suppose. In terms of technology, you know, X-ray tubes helped, silicon drift detectors allowed us to do light elements, you know, better computing power enabled us to get better repeatability, you know, better digital pulse processing allowed us our calibrations to be really robust. There's loads of things, and an acceptance of the technology, really, I suppose.
Would you say the XRF product is served by many different markets, used across the world for so many applications. Our mining applications are some of our most powerful versions of the instrument, and most of those users are geochemists and highly academic people that often write papers. What is your experiencing work those individuals compared to maybe some users that aren't as familiar with the technology?
It's just a real pleasure to. I'm learning all the time. It's just a real pleasure to work with people like that, especially because I'm not a geologist, but I've been working in this industry for long enough that sort of I know enough to get by. But it's because I don't have that base geology training. I'm still learning every day about something new, and most of the innovation that we see with portable XRF, it's actually all being driven by our customers telling us, oh, what about this? Could you try this? And so a lot of the new stuff that we do has really been customer driven, and the ways to apply the technology. So I suppose that's been the main difference, that people start to see ways that the instrument can be used that here in the factory we wouldn't even envisage. So we're just, again, I'm just facilitating the development of this technology with feedback from people who are using it. So that's probably the main thing that I would note on that, to that question.
Traditionally, the past few years, we've really focused on the handheld version of this device. I mentioned earlier, it looks like a gun. To take a test, you perform a trigger, so you pull the trigger. It can also be a benchtop instrument. Do you want to talk a little bit more about how that has helped our customers with the workstation option?
It's allowed customers to look at the technology not in as a handheld and see it more of as a benchtop XRF, which inclines people to be more systematic and have a more systematic approach to their workflow and their methodology, rather than just doing random checks on a bit of rock or a bit of core. You're based, you know, at a workstation or at a table. You're connected to your laptop, and you're automatically thinking becomes a lot more systematic. So I would suggest that the movement towards that has improved the quality in the way the instrument's been used. And I suppose, you know, I guess you're going to ask me a question about, you know, what's coming in the future, and that's probably, I would start to mention the Vanta IX system that we have, which is more, you know, a Vanta XRF in a box that, you know, we can then plug into process streams such as perhaps concentrates on a conveyor belt like we're doing at the moment with one customer, or you know, ash in coal-fired power plants to make sure where we're using coal that it's the best quality coal we can use, help blending, but any sort of process stream that could benefit from chemistry might get value out of this Vanta IX product that we're working on. And so that's pretty exciting. The automation of XRF and the plugging in of our technology into existing systems and process streams. Liquid process streams is another thing we're working on with a partner in the Netherlands at the moment. So that's all quite exciting.
In other industries, we've actually had people place that product, the Vanta IX, on a robotic arm. They even, University of London has sent one on a robotic dog into Chernobyl to test there. Is the mining industry leveraging automation like that or robots for any of this testing?
Our Swedish distributor has put it on a cobot and done some core tray work, yes. Geotech is a partner of ours doing multi-sensor core logging systems, primarily nowadays the box scan. And they are looking at whether the Vanta IX might be suitable for the systems that they manufacture. So definitely, we're definitely going to move in that direction for sure.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I guess one thing that'd be really interesting to hear is what's the newest trends in terms of exploration. So we've heard a lot about battery metals and maybe some other things that elements are looking to measure and locate?
It's all about battery metals right now. It's I just came out of Indaba. Next week I'm heading up to PDAC, and I'd say one in every three inquiries coming across to our exhibition booth at these shows is, maybe they're a gold explorer, but they've found pegmatites on their ground and they want to know what's going on with lithium or cobalt or nickel or manganese or phosphate or copper. And you know, maybe that's one of the elements which is most interesting when people within our industry, but perhaps people who aren't familiar with the mining industry, when you think batteries and you think battery metals, might not necessarily think of copper. They'll think of lithium and they'll think of cobalt. But, you know, copper is the machine that drives the electric industry. The amount of copper that we need to go carbon neutral through battery technology is just astronomical. People don't have any idea about how many more mines we actually need to find to go carbon-free or at least carbon neutral. It's staggering. So copper is really going to be in huge demand, of course, along with lithium and cobalt and nickel and these other elements. But, it's really all about battery metals right now.
That's so exciting. Do you have any advice for, I guess, any tips or tricks for someone that's new to XRF or maybe that's not leveraging XRF technology yet in their organization?
Well, I did make a couple of notes about this question. And so I've got two bits of advice, maybe one for colleagues and one for customers. Which one would you like me to start with?
I can start with colleagues.
All right. I love the adage that you've got two ears and one mouth. So I think, you know, we as suppliers to an industry really need to learn the art of listening to what people need, to learn about their project and their pain points. We aren't just making products to sell. We're partnering with our customers to solve their problems. So we need to make them more efficient. We need to ultimately save our customers time and money. And so to be able to do that, you need to understand about the customer's issues that need solving. So listen. And to our customers, I wrote down a few notes. I think if I would encourage our customers to spend some time at the beginning doing some orientation work on your project, to work out your optimized workflow so that you can answer the questions that you're going to ask of the XRF. I can't emphasize the importance of a bit of good planning and training. Don't take any shortcuts when you train your people on XRF. It'll always turn out best in the end if you invest in good training. Make sure everyone knows how to use the instrument correctly.
Absolutely. Are there any misconceptions about XRF, you know, in the mining industry?
I think there's becoming less and less, but I suppose the one misconception that you do come across more often than not is that if you just grab a rock or a piece of drill core and point an XRF at it once, you're going to get exactly the same result as a laboratory. You know, that's probably the most common misconception that you know, these instruments, they only test the surface of you know, the top microns, maybe millimeters of any sample that you're testing, and it's a 10 millimeter diameter window that you're testing. So, you know, whatever you're seeing at contact with that material is what you're going to measure. So you're not necessarily going to be able to just randomly approach any rock and any piece of core and have a magic wand that's going to tell you exactly what's in that entire sample. So that's probably the only common misconception. Our industry's really well educated on this technology now, so fewer and fewer misconceptions about the technology these days.
Well, it is really interesting that throughout the mining life cycle, there's people who are using our products to verify, you're using handheld XRF to verify material, you know, at exploration and in the labs.
You remember when we started doing those 2-minute testimonials, Michelle? You know, we really started doing that because we just had so many customers who you'd run into at an event, and they'd say, "Oh, Todd, you can't believe what we're doing with our instrument, and we've saved this much money." And it was happening so often, I just started thinking, I've got to get this information down somehow. We've got to write it up, or even better, let's video it. So, oh yeah, it's genuine, and it makes your day so much more satisfying when a customer will come up and tell you these great stories. So it's real. What we do is real, and that's cool.
It is. Any up and coming exciting things going on in mining or with the instrument that you'd like to share?
I think I've covered them already, actually. I mean, the battery metals, the stuff we're doing in the battery metal space, I'm really excited about. The stuff we're doing in automating XRF and process streams, I think, is probably the most exciting things that we have on our product roadmap, I would say. You know, watch this space on those sort of things.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Todd, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Been fun.
It was nice chatting with you.
Yeah, nice chatting with
you. Thank you.
All right.
That was it for today's show. We hope you enjoyed this sneak peek into the ANI and XRF world. If there's any other topics related to NDT that you would like to hear about on this podcast, please reach out to us at podcast@evidentscientific.com. But in the meantime, thanks again for your contribution of keeping us safe out there. Bye for now.